My next guest is the DJ for Public Enemy and Prophets of Rage. He's an incredible artist, and if you haven't seen him live in concert, you are missing out. He's DJ Lord, and I want to welcome him to the Library of Timonica. Thanks, man, for joining me.
What's up, guys?
Put down on that list, they bombing that list, balling that fist. Raising that fist, like that, like this, like this.
I was, you know, reading up interviews with you, watching interviews with you, and you're obviously, your influence in music is not just hip-hop music, it's all over. I mean, you even said during an interview that you would end a house party with Bob Marley's Could You Be Loved? First, why that track? And then secondly, how do you think your sound and has kind of influenced... and your sets have influenced the variety of music you listen to?
That's a broad question, man. I've always been exposed to different music, man, from my uncles living in Savannah and then having those red light basement parties, me sneaking down there smelling reefer, as they called it at the time. And I was always around Bob, you know, sounds Bob Marley, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Rick James, all the classics, man. All the classics. Marvin Gaye, onward. So I've always had a Rolodex of sound in my head. Now, when I got of age and I started trying to figure out what are these songs and searching these songs and spinning these songs and DJ sets, especially on vinyl, when they weren't easy to find, you know, most of it came from me just stealing my uncle's records and playing them. Until I started scratching, and then nobody's going to ruin the record, and then they take it from me. But I've always had a plethora of music in my head, and I just apply it to adulthood, and as a DJ, I apply it in my sets. And if it's too good music, you know, people will respond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from what I've seen, and this is worldwide, black, white, green, polka dot, whatever color, whatever color, I mean, whatever race, whatever, people respond to good music. You know, it's universal like a smile.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried go city to city, try different sets, you know, no set's the same. I'm not one of those DJs that's got to play the same set in, you know, Canada that I'll play in Spain, because, you know, the vibe's different. So, right. You know, the crowd's going to be different. The energy's going to be different. So you read the crowd, you pull sets from what you read. And ending a crazy set that began at 78 beats per minute and ended at 120, ending a set like that with like a Bob Marley Could You Be Loved, to me, is just like, you know, sealing the deal, putting the cap on it. You know, Could You Be Loved? And on this planet, that's relative to all people.
Mm.
And you should see the people singing it, man. Even if they don't speak a word of English, they know that song. Mm. They know that vibe. For me, it's this ending in unity, that type song. And what better way to do it than with a Bob Marley tune?
I would miss out if I, you know, you're obviously a DJ, and I would have to ask you about, you know, vinyl. And you even said you're one to embrace new technology as well.
Mm-hmm.
First, why don't you mind using new technology? But then second, in terms of sound, is there a sound that vinyl is able to give you that the new technology isn't? And is there a sound that new technology is able to give you, or you've discovered that vinyl kind of isn't able to give you?
Number one, there's nothing like vinyl. There's nothing like the analog sound of vinyl. You know, that warm sound, that crackly sound. You're not going to get that with digital. With digital, you're going to get the clarity. You're going to get the punch, you know, but that's another thing. But as far as like keeping that classic sound, you know, vinyl is the winner. And I'm a diehard vinyl fan. You know, I came up on vinyl, and I learned some of my craziest nights practicing were on vinyl. Some of my craziest ideas were created on vinyl. But technology is here, and you either get with technology, you'll get left behind like the dinosaurs, and we all know what happened to them. So I think it's a reward to be able to transition into digital. It's fucking great, man.
When you talk about new technology, I think what also comes up is the kind of how, quote unquote, I guess, easy it's become, right, to become a DJ or become like a producer. But what I think what's left behind in the conversation is that, and you know, I mentioned at the top, or you even talked about your musicality and the knowledge you have of music and the selection process. Mm-hmm. So in today's world, can we seriously take can we call someone under a certain age a DJ if they don't have that music knowledge, or can someone technically be, or is it okay to call them a DJ if they don't have that amount of music knowledge?
Tricky. Nowadays, everyone calls themselves a DJ, as you've seen. Everyone's a DJ all of a sudden. You know, iTunes, a whole, you know, a gazillion songs, and all of a sudden, hey, I'm a DJ. No, you're not. You know, it takes more than just having a crazy collection of music to be a DJ. You have to pay your dues, number one, and you have to do the work. You have to know how to read the crowd. You have to know how to select. You got to have the skill set. There's much more than just having songs and being a DJ. So no, you can't. You don't jump up and get Serato and all of a sudden, you know what? I'm a DJ. I'm going to get gigs and, you know, pull a Paris Hilton. Pull a Paris Hilton and then take over the world. It's just not happening, man. You may be a DJ for at your house in front of your drunk friends or whatever, Friday, but you're not a DJ, dude. And the keepers of the realm won't allow you to exist for too long with that. There's a lot of cats that, you know, guarding the realm with that one.
You talk about how, yeah, I mean, part of being a DJ is, you know, reading the crowd and knowing the music. And I can't help but think, DJs also, they're saying something with their music, with their sets, with, you know, their scratches. You're obviously famously part of, Public Enemy and Prophets of Rage, two groups, political group, you know, that could be seen as quote unquote political groups, right? How does your role as the DJ in these two groups, how do you support the political message, and then how are you kind of giving off your own message by the music you play or the samples or the scratches you make?
Like Terminator X, speak with his hands?
Yes.
I speak with my hands. And it may be a sample. It may be a phrase or something that I may put together that's cut from different songs, or different artists like a Chuck and a Zach, you know, and a Big Daddy Kane or something like that, that says the phrase for me. But it's basically putting out the message through my hands. Like it'd be like say we're doing Fight the Power Live. And I'll cut, fight. That's cutting out there. We're hearing that, right? That's going to someone's brain, all right? That's a subliminal message, you know? So I do that my way. So that's my voice, you know? I'm on the microphone as far as my solo test and everything, but it's not for lyrical content. It's for greeting the crowd, pumping the crowd up, keeping the crowd going, make an announcement, talk shit, pump the crowd, make an announcement. Exactly. The music itself is what I'm trying to get to the people. And my music will, you know, I'm not going to be one of those DJs that tell you I don't play songs that curse or songs that have some kind of derogatory in the club thing. But you better know that 80% of my set is meant to get in your brains on an uplifting level.
Speaking of someone who you currently worked with, who gets people thinking a lot lyrically, Cool Keith. On the new album Afterburn, he's part of the first track, Ego Force. Can you kind of first talk about that track and how that came together? And the music part of the track, your part of the track. What were kind of the musical influences going into that track?
Let's see. By the way, start. Cool Keith. always been a fan of Kool Keith, even when I first started DJing in Savannah. I was always following Ultramagnetic, have all the, you know, all the tunes. I had the mixtapes back in the day from, you know, 98.7 Kiss FM, that Red Alert cut up, Chuck Chill Out cut up. Fast forward to current days. I had a birthday party in Atlanta at my residency, Final Fridays at MJQ, Final Friday. And I figured it'd be dope to have the Kool Keith, because I would always see him on the road with Public Enemy. Actually, we hung out in London one late night, 3, 4 in the morning, popping bars. We would always see each other on the road. And I always, it was my dream to do a song with Kool Keith. Always. So, you know, we exchanged numbers, and I finally reached out to him to ask him to, you know, come perform at my birthday party. And he agreed.
Nice.
And he came out, man, and I picked him up from the airport, and we were kicking it, and, you know, our chemistry was there, and we clicked so much that we went shopping. We went to Dillard's. Our thing now is going to Dillard's and buying Oxford tonight, the ones that's on sale. Like $7 or $10. We do that. We go to Dillard's. You know, Dillard's is a down south thing. So when you come here, we go straight to Dillard's and, you know, get down and we go get dinner or something. But he agreed to do the party. We hung out, and I ran an idea past him, man. What do you think about, you know, doing the collab, man? I got this song called, it wasn't called Eagle Force. I got this track, you know, made by my man 3PO, who's my homie here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we make music together. And he's like, I'm down. Send me the track. And I sent him the track before he got on the plane. I took him to the airport. He had the track, and he wrote it before he even landed.
Jeez, wow.
Yeah, henceforth, Eagle Force flying over the Air Force. So he wrote it up there, still high off of our weekend, you know, of us doing, we tore Atlanta up,
mm-hmm.
first of all. And he let me hear it, and I was like, oh, man, that's it. That is it. And since it's a studio, he cleaned it up. I added the scratches to it, and this is what we got, Eagle Force.
Oh, damn.
This is how it came to be, just like that. Just like that. And it was like a tornado, man. Because, you know, when those opportunities happen like that, you gotta jump on them. You got to seize them. And we jumped on it and made it happen. And big shout out to 3PO. Big shout out to Keith. And, hell, man, we got more to come.
Speaking of, obviously, Kool Keith, incredible MC, no doubt. You know, there's no argument there, right? But for me, Kool Keith is that MC that I'm constantly stopping and Googling like crazy because lyrics are going over my head. And then I feel like, I don't know what's happening.
Welcome to the club.
Same thing with Eagle Force. I feel like same thing. when you're, you know, you, as mentioned, you work with, Public Enemy and Prophets of Rage. So these are lyrics that are easier to, you know, they're complicated lyrics, but easier to understand, so to say. When you have an MC like a Kool Keith, where you might yourself be Googling like crazy to see what the hell he's talking about, how does that work for you in terms of, I guess, supporting, being the DJ and supporting kind of his message, on the track if you might not know what he's exactly talking about?
At this point, man, who knows 100% what Keith is talking about in 2018 after all this time at Ultra, man? He came out going over people's heads.
Right.
That was the thing back in the day. He was before people was using big words, you know, on purpose and all that, he was using big words. So he had me going to the thesaurus way back, like in high school.
Mm.
Okay? So I developed an ear for Kool Keith's lyrics. So decipher them now in 2018 was nothing for me. I spent all my teenage years figuring this guy out, chasing him, trying to figure it out. You know, man, I'm telling you, dude, I would write down the lyrics and recite them in battles like they were mine. Kool Keith's lyrics were Ultramagnetic. Well, I'm a revolutionist with skills of awesome X2 and super intellect, while another professor my information. Control identity. I'm John Doe. Of course, you can see we're known as terrorists. We're often dangerous, running committees, connecting cities to cities and overseas, from running quick as a breeze into a meeting. Who does that? Who does that? That's old, old Keith, okay? That's way back. And me hearing that, like, what in the fuck is he talking about? You know?
Right.
So I was deciphering those lyrics way back, man. So now it's not, I mean, some of the stuff he still goes over my head. Okay, even in his Eagle Force, it's not 100%. Don't quote me. He's not 100%, I understand, but I get it. You know, I'm at the point where I get it. So, but to keep up with an MC Kool Keith, man, Black Elvis or Dr. Octagon, you have to have a certain mindset.
Right.
So don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. You're not alone in that fight.
Does that kind of like, I mean, with someone's, I don't know if it's a nice term, lyrically complicated like Kool Keith, does that kind of force you to kind of step up your game and as a DJ in terms of like being a little more complicated or a little more elaborate in your routine?
Yes, indeed. Even the scratches on Eagle Force, I wanted to come, you know, the tempo of the scratches weren't like, how can I say it? I had the word for it before, I had it in my head, but. But like the first one, he's on beat, off beat. Similar to how his rhyme flow is. And of course, that's an influence of me listening to him and his lyrics. You know, because he's even, you know, straight into it. But I wanted to bounce it just like his lyrics were going. His lyrics were laid back. I wanted to make the scratches laid back.
Mm.
His lyrics were bouncing left and right, like bobbing and weaving. I wanted to make the scratches bobbing and weaving. 3PO got it. The track does the same thing. So all of us are in this spaceship bobbing and weaving and under it and attacking and evasive action. And it's lovely.
Mm.
What is your? This is going to be my question about Eagle Force. And you obviously mentioned you scratch in the middle of it. What is just in general? What is your kind of your overall favorite thing about the scratch?
About which scratch?
Just scratching in general. I mean, not any particular scratch, but just doing it, during a live show, during it for an album.
Because it's my expression, you know, and expressions change, so. Every time I'm hearing a new beat or a new crowd or a new vibe, you know, and when it's time for me to express myself through my hand, I try to come different. Try to come in a way that, you know, represents the moment, represents the energy at the time.
Are these, when you do live, are they planned out?
Of course not.
I knew it.
Of course not. I mean, unless it's a song that goes a certain way, but even that, I change it up a little bit. Like, say, the battle between Tom and I on Hail to the Chief.
Right.
You know, they go a certain way. You know, he's him for a certain amount of bars and me for a certain amount of bars. But I'll make change it a little bit, you know, the intricate changes here and there. And, you know, DJ heads know. You know, they'll hear it. You know, they're always going, oh, that's the way the song goes. But they won't hear that I came in earlier. Mm. Or I dragged out the very end, or I put a chirp here, or I put a flare there, or a crab where it's supposed to be like a stab. You know, that's the whole thing of keeping it fresh, man. That's how you live. If you ask me, it doesn't get stale. It's never a dull moment.
I think when I saw you at the when I saw Prophets at the Apollo and Living Color opened, and I think
you were there. That's dope.
Yeah, it was, and I've never seen Living Color before, and that was just an incredible show itself. But then your opening, I was just like, all right, I got my money's worth. I mean, obviously the rest of the show was great, but just to watch the opening of what you did, I'd never seen it before, and I kind of was like, oh, this is kind of incredible stuff. I cannot do ever.
That was fun. That was a fun night. And I always, and playing in the Apollo, I always love that. That's a whole other kind of respect for me, you know? All the greats that's played there before me, legends, and everyone that's graced that stage and energy in the building and being in New York, period. You know, that's a whole level of, it's a whole other kind of energy. So when it's time for you to go on, you got to bring it.
Is your, the beginning of the set, or for you, is it, how much of it is, I guess, crowd energy based? Or do you feel that your job is to get the crowd's energy up?
Yeah, that's my job. That's what pushed me out there. Like a fucking experimental hamster. It's the crowd, like, oh, fuck this, get the fuck out of here, boo! They send me out there, and, you know, but tomato cans or freaking bananas or whatever the crowd's going to do, it's my job. It's my job to get them in the mood for what's coming. You know, and if I'm whack, guess what? They're going to show me, they're going to, the crowd's going to tell you, you're freaking whack. You know, my job is to get them hyped for what's coming, get them hyped for profit. Profit is to take them, take the baton and take the ball and slam the ball. My job is to get them in the mood, and if I'm not in the mood, the crowd's not going to get in the mood, and we got a big problem. So that comes with reading the crowd, man. You can't get up there. I tell DJs and, you know, even that, you know, people, I tell DJs, I tell friends of mine, I tell people in general, MCs as well, if you're warming up the crowd, better bring it. There is no, oh, I had a bad set anymore. It's the digital age.
Right.
You know, back in the day, at least back in the day, if you did a wax set, all right, say for instance you did a wax set, you had the flu. You know, there's been plenty of wax sets I've done back in the day. I had the flu, whatever, tour life, you know, just beat down. At least the only people that witnessed you doing a wax set were the people there. Nowadays,
now it's on video.
Before you even get to your hotel room, your wax set is posted online with like a thousand hits before you even get to your hotel room. You know, so the digital age is a gift and a curse that goes back to you got to bring it. You got to bring it. Whether you got the flu, whether you got your legs falling off, you got ran over by a car, it doesn't matter. Bring it.
So what, two questions. What has been the best thing that's ever happened to you during a set, and what has kind of been the worst thing that's happened to you during a set?
Huh. The best thing that's happened to me during a set is, I would say the best thing that happened to me during a set is the crowd feeling some new music that I dropped that I wasn't feeling myself. You know, there are times where I second guess myself or I overthink. Mm-hmm. I do that a lot. And it was one of those times I was on tour, I think Australia, which, you know, I love Australia. I was overthinking the set because I was trying some new things and trying to, this was when I was just getting to the point of comfort of playing the mashup set, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they call it now. I just call it just playing music. They call it mashup. Whatever. And I was just getting comfortable doing that, you know, going from this, going from classics, doing from this to hip hop to rock, da 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 da. And I was, you know, I wasn't 100%. But the crowd got into it like no other. I mean, from crowd surfing to everything to even wanting an encore.
Oh, wow.
So that would be the best thing, because I was like, man, this is wack. I don't know what I'm doing. I should stick to the record. That was one of the times second guessing, overthinking. I should stick to doing this and just do a hip hop set and just let it go from that and be done and then go and then sit down and then be drunk or some kid, you know, that kind of thing. Anything for her to get off stage. And I said, you know what? We're going to do this. And fuck it. Jumped in, just like jumping in a cold pool, scared to jump in, finally jumped in, the water was great. The worst time on the stage dealing with the crowd, having technical difficulties in the beginning when I was learning Serato, the learning curve of Serato, which I'm sure so many DJs have that story as well. I've seen it. It's happened to me, you know. Because making the transition coming from, you know, diehard vinyl guy to digital to technology, it's not easy. It wasn't easy for me, and I went down fighting. I went down. Refused to get Toronto at one point. I was like, I'm gonna carry records and that, and that's when the misconception. Please quote me on this. The misconception that Toronto DJs for you was running rampant in the DJ community. So a lot of people were hating on it, hating on it off the top, not even knowing. So somehow I said I'm gonna stick with vinyl. You know, diehard vinyl, Rubano vinyl, and vinyl and sound, and analog, and scratches, old school, got to flash, run, that's the whole hip hop mantra, okay? So, I went to, I think I did a show in Boston, it was me and the DJ Revolution. Both were headlining, and I come in with my nice silver flight cases full of records, and we're headlining, mind you. The opening guy played about 80% of my of my record collection, and he had Toronto. Yeah, disaster. Luckily, I was able to, finesse it and do some tricks and, extend my time and bring the beat back. Y'all have a good time. Looking at the clock. Start it over again. Yeah, what's up? And, my skill set took over then, so I was able to showcase more than let music play. Right, and that saved my ass. So the next morning, I called up Serato. I love your product, man. You guys doing endorsements? And I had my hat in my hand. And I haven't looked back since. I still go digging. Mm-hmm. I still have my diehard vinyl collection, looking at it right now. But all the extra promo copies and all the bunch of cool stuff I used to have that I had, storage full of crates and crates of that stuff, man, it's just gone. I gave, donated to Goodwill, donated what we have to Salvation Army. Did I answer the question about the horror story? My horror story?
Yeah, no, that was,
The horror story was having technical difficulties with Serato once I got it. That was my horror story in front of the crowd, because it forces you to become a nerd. A lot of people want to, admit that, but it forces you to become a nerd because you have to learn about CPUs and computer data usage and things like that. And you have to know your equipment. Right. And in the beginning, a lot of people couldn't afford Macs, including me. So the PC route, I'm talking the basic PC route or just any computer. Because I wasn't computer savvy. You got a computer? Okay, I need it. I need to run this new program. Who knows if you have viruses or porn viruses? Who knew what was on it? I just needed a computer. And most times it didn't go crazy until you got up on that stage in front of a whole bunch of people who don't care if you're trying some new technology and you want to try Serato. They just want the party to keep on going. But lo and behold, your computer's frozen. And you don't know what to do. And now you've got the pinwheel of death. And you can't stop it on the Mac. And you don't know what to do because you just got this program 2 weeks ago. So I've had those stories. I've had a few of those horror stories, starting with Serato. And you just have to go through them, man, to learn it. And now, again, I say to every DJ out there, Serato is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Big shout out to Serato.
This is a what if question, but this is also this could be part of a horror story type thing. So you don't have Serato, you only have your vinyl, right? Mm-hmm. And you're flying out to let's say a place to do a set in California.
Yeah.
Airlines lose your vinyl collection does not make it to California except two.
That happened.
Except
that's
two.
Happened.
Oh shit! Okay. Well,
yeah, that happened. I'm glad you brought that's happened in Australia.
But the entire vinyl collection was not there.
Gone.
So what do you do?
I got with the promoter. We went out to the nearest record store. I wish I could remember the name of it. It was in Sydney, and I had to buy a whole bunch of records over again before my set that night.
Wow.
Jet lagged and everything.
How many records do you buy?
I think I bought at least $500 US worth of vinyl. And I had a few friends in there that were lending me pieces as well, so I was able to put together a set. And of course, they found the vinyl 2 days later. So now I got quadruple copies of these records now. Yeah. It happens. What are you going to do?
It's crazy.
The show must go on. And you're buying freaking imports that are like 12 U.S. dollars each, and you need doubles.
Right.
Yeah, that kind of shit. I wasn't balling, you know?
That's crazy.
I'm not a baller, man, but the show had to go on. And, I mean, what are you going to do? You booked.
Right.
It's not the promoter's fault that the airline messed up. Then the airline give you, a $50 gift certificate or something?
Right.
For your trouble? You just spent 500 Aussie dollars or 500 U.S. dollars?
So what if that happens and let's say only two pieces of vinyl or four, so two of the same records twice, make it. Are there two pieces of vinyl that you could, or you would be able, you think would be able to kind of do a set with, and which records would you think that would be?
I can do a set with any two. I could do a set with one record.
is there a preference of which record it would be?
I mean, you mean like a showcase? It won't be a set. A set.
A showcase. Yeah. Not a set.
Like a showcase. James Brown's Funky Drummer. How about that?
Yeah,
that's not a bad record.
You can flip that so many ways, and you're gonna get the people up, and you can bring it back, and you got James on there. Yeah, Funky Drummer. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hit it. Nice.
So I have three questions left. One from me. What's your absolute favorite thing about being a DJ? But also, what's the absolute favorite about the live show versus, you know, you just put out the album Afterburn and doing an album?
Mm-hmm.
What are your two favorite things about the live show and then also the album?
The one thing about favorite thing about a live show is that it's ever changing, and It's just that. It's live. So the improv of it is, you know, is what gives me a rush. So I love the live element of it. The part about performing a record is, you know, letting the crowd have it and seeing their reactions.
Mm.
And actually performing the song, getting down with the actual song. And it's one thing recording a song. It's a whole other thing performing a song. And then like Chuck D said, either do the song or the song will do you.
Mm.
And there's a lot of people that make a dope studio recording, but get up there live and it just runs out of gas. You know, they don't necessarily know how to do the song. They don't project the song. They don't believe the song. My thing is make the people fucking believe the song. Mm. Make the people feel the song.
It's amazing.
So you hear that song, you know, you see me performing that song kicking you in the chest.
Right.
So not many people have mastered that.
And my last two questions, they're from my kids. They I told them I was talking to you today. They had a, here wants to know, do you read Dogman comics and Captain Underpants comics?
Do I read what?
Dogman comics. It's a comic book. I don't know. It's and Captain Underpants.
I've read Captain Underpants.
All right, so that's good. And then Emmy just simply asks, where are you going?
Where am I going?
That was her hard-hitting question.
Nice. Upward and onward.
Nice. And then I have to ask, what's next for you? I mean, you have this album out. Are you touring with the album or continuing touring with Public Enemy and Rage? And Prophets
right
of Rage?
Right now, what's up with me? We're working on My State Volume 3 with Peyote Cody. Big shout out to Peyote Cody. And hopefully some more solo gigs before Prophets get back in gear. I think Poppy's going to be touring, if not, you know, December. We're going to start fresh in 2019.
In the States or overseas?
We're not sure yet because we're working on the second album as well.
Nice.
So there's a lot going on. So we got Poppy's new album. We got Marsh Tape Volume 3. I think I got to lay some scratches for Mike Redman. He just sent me a track I got to listen to. And, of course, 3PO and I are back in the lab because we got to do a follow-up follow-up after this Afterburn album.
Mm.
More weird shit, more crazy scratches.
That's incredible.
More head-crushing music. Yeah.
He's a DJ Lord. He's a DJ for Public Enemy and Prophets of Rage. A new album, Afterburn, an incredible album. Also, if you ever get a chance to see him live, do it. It's an amazing show. Even if you stay for the first 10 minutes, it'll be worth your money. DJ Lord, thank you so much for joining me in the library with Tim Heineken, man. Thank you.
No worries, brother. Thanks so much for having me. Space cruising at warp light speed. Apollo Creed, American greed, counting T-minus the highest. Speedometer, car built with Yamaha monitors. Emergency metal cabinets for the hypochondriacs. The Spectrum City is back. Eagle Force, flying over the Air Force. Eagle Force, flying over the Air Force. Eagle Force, flying over the Air Force. Eagle Force.